In terms of Welsh filmmaking, you are probably Wales's best hope at the moment of in terms of, you know, making these films and getting sort of Wales into the mainstream media. How do you feel about
Well, that's a lot of pressure.
that?
Hello and welcome to the Dan and Joe Film Show, episode 57. We're fast approaching 60. Good of you to join us. And as always, I'm joined by my partner in crime. If he was a cuddly red panda, I want to be stuck on him all day. It's Joe Richards.
I am a cuddly red panda.
You are.
Actually, I am.
And can I just say, I met your family recently, right? Joe's little birthday bash. And they came up to me and they were like, Dan, you're too nice on Joe in the intro. So you need to break it to him. And actually, they're true. I'm way too nice to you. So you better watch out next episode. Tell you
wow.
what.
Wow. Yeah. I can't even remember that. That party, I swear to God. I woke up on the Sunday and I felt still drunk on the Sunday.
Wow.
And then, you know, kind of got on with the hangover and got through it. And then on the Monday, Hannah was like, oh, can you remember you were saying this to my friend Katie about how, because me and Hannah went to like London and I was telling like Hannah's friend, like, oh, you two go and have the day together. I'm going to go off and do my own thing in London. I was like, I have no recollection of this.
No.
I cannot remember even saying goodbye to you and Amelia. Like,
wow.
I can't remember anything like that. But the party itself, how lovely it was. I remember playing beer pong. And you were getting up at one point and showing your stuff, I
oh,
think.
Oh, yeah. I'm very good at flicking the balls. But the best thing was the voice message you sent me,
oh,
right?
Oh, God.
So I left the party in bed, right? Get my phone out. I'm like, oh, gosh, let's play this voice memo. Right, I'm going to do an impersonation, right? I'm going to try my best. It was hilarious. It was 1 minute long, so quite short for Joe, but Joe's used to having short intervals. So the message was basically like this. Hey, mate. Oh, thank you so much for coming. I really appreciate it. And, just love you, man. I loved it. It was so cute. And, it was a great night. It was a great night. And,
yeah, it was great. You know, before you came, I briefed the whole family. I was like, my nephews were so excited to meet you because obviously my eldest brother, he plays the show. I think the kids listen to it every now and again, especially when they get a name drop. So they were genuinely excited. And we did have a bit of a laugh. And when you walked in, they were like, can we have your autograph?
Oh, yeah.
Which you love.
I did. I knew it was a joke. Eventually, I knew it was a joke. I did think they were serious at first. I was of course.
But it came from a place of genuine, like, excitement because I think everybody was really excited to meet you from my side of family because, I mean, God, we've been friends now for so long. And, you know, we always say on the show and everything that, you know, I consider you an extension of my family. You are like another little brother to me. So it was nice to have you and Amelia come over, the meeting of people. It was a really lovely night, even though, you know, I did pay for it the next day.
You did. You paid to do. Your family are the best. They are the bomb. And I love them very much. And you're right. So warm and welcoming. And I felt like I could just be adopted there and then. I was like, sign the papers.
Well, Dan, the next party already in the diary, Eurovision. Yeah. Eurovision.
Oh, sign me up.
It's going to be incredible. Oh. My family will be there. Hannah's family, you'll be there. We'll pick countries and, you know, we'll have a big old Eurovision bash.
So, I'm just thinking of the costumes and the props. I need to get planning.
You're gonna go all out. I can tell already. Your costume's going to be the best of the night. I know that already.
I tell you what, I better start, you know, pop my private parts in a special place because my pants are going to be tight, boy. My pants are going to be tight.
See a little drag tuck.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You won't see them. But welcome everybody back. I know it's been quite a while since we've done an episode, but thank you so much for listening. And yeah, we've got a fabulous show today. We have a wonderful interview with Craig Roberts. We've had him on the show before. He talked Eternal Beauty like a year and a half ago now, which is crazy to think.
Really, really crazy. Time flies.
But he's fantastic, you know, a Welsh delight, actor, director. His brand new film, Phantom of the Open, is released in cinemas March 18th. So go and check it out. And we'll have an interview with him later in the show. We also have reviews today of The Batman.
The Batman.
The Batman. I really want there to be a high-pitched Batman in the next film. Like, hey, guys. Gotham City.
Why it's not? Gonna work. Why not? Do it.
Do it. We've also got reviews of Turning Red, the latest Pixar Disney film available on Disney Plus. For all you kiddies out there who just, you know, you want to stick something on for the kids, stick it on, keep them amused for an hour and a half. And we're also going to be talking about the BAFTAs, which took place just this last Sunday. It was the 75th BAFTA Awards, hosted by Rebel Wilson. A very slim Rebel Wilson, I must say. She looked fabulous, didn't she? She looked great.
She did. She did.
She did. And so let's move on to that now. Let's talk about BAFTAs. Like I said, it happened last Sunday, 75th BAFTA Awards. Lots of nominations, lots of shocks, lots of deserved wins. So just a quick recap, if you didn't watch the show, The Power of the Dog won Best Film, which I was quite surprised by, I have to say. I did think Belfast had it in the bag. I almost wrote it on a notepad, and I was like, oh, there we are. I'm a psychic, maybe. It did win, though. Best Outstanding British Film, which I think kind of makes sense, isn't it?
Yeah,
so,
but yeah.
That's Belfast. Encanto won Best Animated Film. We don't talk about Bruno. we certainly talk about Encanto, because that did brilliantly. Power of Dog as well won Best Director. Licorice Pizza, which I've still not seen, won Best Original Screenplay. And I will just give a shout out to Joanna Scanlon, who is Welsh. She won Best Leading Actress, and she said a little Diolch yn Fawr in the ceremony,
yeah,
which I thought was really nice. Obviously, you got Will Smith as well, won Best Leading Actor, which I was very happy for. Ariana DeBose won Best Supporting Actress for West Side Story. I know we're big fans on that. And Dune won 5 awards for the evening, and that did well. Amongst many other awards, we're not going to go through all of them, but what did you think of the ceremony, Joan? Were there any surprises for you?
In terms of surprises, Will Smith did surprise me slightly. Look, I love his performances in King Richard, but my money was on Benedict Cumberbatch for Power of the Dog. And I think a lot of people were surprised that the performances in Power of the Dog didn't do as well as I think people were thinking. I think a lot of people had Benedict down as a shoe-in for Oscars, but now it's anybody's game. It really truly is. I think overall I was happy with the awards themselves. I thought, you know, you had a diverse bunch of winners amongst them all, and it was like something for everybody. You know, every film sort of seem to get something, which I think is a really good way of doing it and balancing it out. Like you said, you know, the fact that Belfast won Outstanding British Film instead of, you know, Best Film, I think is a really good way of juggling it. So I think overall, everybody got something. King Richard got something, Licorice Pizza, Dune did incredibly well. So that was great. The ceremony itself, I did not enjoy, like, at all. It got off to a storming start with the Bond tribute. I loved that. And I thought, this is what these award ceremonies should be. In a year where you've had films like West Side Story, which is up for awards, and you know, musicals such as like In the Heights and things like that. For me, BAFTAs and Oscars should be a celebration of film. And if you've got those sort of musical numbers and those performances, like, embrace it. And I know there was a musical performance from Coda, which I still haven't seen yet.
No.
But obviously Dame Shirley Bassey, you know, opened the show stormingly. But, you know, otherwise, it just felt very meandering. It felt very meek. You know, the sketches, if you can even call them sketches, you know, Rebel Wilson throwing bras into the crowd. It felt last minute. It felt like Rebel Wilson literally had a meeting the day before and was like, can we get some bras? And they were like, yeah. And she's like, let's spray them gold. And I think it's not just the BAFTAs. I think it's the Oscars. I think it needs to be more of a celebration. One of the big things with the BAFTAs as well is obviously it's not live. It's pre-recorded. So if you go on Twitter early, people, American journalists are like tweeting out the winners before you've even seen the show. How is that fair? We have to stay up until 3 a.m. in the morning to watch the Oscars live. But they get to know who the BAFTA winners are before we even know.
I tell you what, Joe, I thought it was Monday morning. I was like, what's going on? What's going on? Deja vu? Yeah, totally. I was like, have I missed the ceremony? Was it on Sunday at 4 o'clock? What's going on?
Exactly. And I think not being live, the show loses something. The show loses an excitement, an edge. Mm. Like, we're a fan. When we record our Oscar special, we'll be having a few bevvies, recording it late at night. Do that. Have a three-hour live show at like 8 o'clock on a Sunday night. Have the celebrities a bit boozed up. See what happens.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It's the BAFTAs is like before the pre-drinks. You've just entered the party.
Yes.
You're too sober. Get a bevy down you. Sit down and have some fun. The Oscars and the Golden Globes, for example, are a bit more, have a couple bevvies. It's a bit more fun, isn't it? And you're right. The BAFTAs are just too serious. And I think that combined with Rebel Wilson, I just didn't think it was a good match at all. I just felt like I know 2 years ago, I think it was, she did one of the awards. She's very, very funny. And they were like, oh, let's just get Rebel Wilson. But I feel like if she was able to have an audience that were like fully embracing it and were like had a couple beers with them and like were just having a good laugh, I think she would have really embraced it. But it's tough when you're doing these jokes and the audience were like, deadpan.
They were so deadpan.
And listen, I don't think every joke landed. I thought some jokes were terrible. Benedict Cumberbatch cake. What the heck was going on there? I was but she was walking with the audience and they all looked like they were at a funeral. They were just there, just like really awkward, didn't want to make eye contact with her.
Yeah.
And she makes a joke about that. She's like, oh, I don't want to make eye contact with me. And I felt sorry for her because I felt like she was really trying. Yes, I said the jokes weren't the best, like you said. They felt very last minute. But just go along with it. Just have some rapport with her. Like, it was so embarrassing. And I bet she needed a stiff drink after that ceremony.
Absolutely. And I think part of the problem with her jokes as well, I know it's BAFTA. I know the connection to the royals. But I mean, Prince Andrew, I'm not a prude. I think, everybody's fair game. Mm. Obviously, with Ricky Gervais and what he did with the Golden Globes, tackling celebrities and things like that, that seems to be the new thing now, that you have to be controversial.
Yeah.
And there's not always a need for that. Like bringing up Prince Andrew.
Yeah.
And even like the last joke about like Boris Johnson, I'm not his biggest fan, but again, I was like, this is BAFTAs. Like, this is a celebration about film. Like, if you're going to make jokes about the films themselves and like the people involved. Although I did feel bad for Kenneth Branagh for the Army Hammer joke. I felt awful for him. I thought that was scathing. So I think that was part of it as well. I don't think she did the jokes themselves landed because they were unnecessary.
Yeah.
I think get Anton Deck to host. They are top of their game.
Yeah.
They know how to entertain. Just get them to host. Saturday Night Takeaway vibes. I mean, those sketches and stuff in there are brilliant. Imagine what they could do with the BAFTAs.
Yeah, you just need someone like that, a duo that I think will just go at them.
Yes.
And won't give them a choice but to smile and laugh, okay?
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, 100%. And I will just say, the ratings were terrible. I mean, Dancing on Ice beat it.
Didn't know that.
By like a million people. It's not even like it was close. So I think they need to sort it out. And I think it's interesting. I think we'll see how the Oscars does. Obviously, you've got three females hosting that. And we'll see how that does in the ratings because that did terrible last year. But maybe it's the fact that people are getting sick at these award shows, I don't know. But I think you're right. If you had the right host, I think it can be a good night. Finally, I think my predictions going forward, there are a few, I think, who are in the bag. I think Ariana DeBose will win Supporting Actress. I really feel strongly about that. I think Encanto will win Best Animated Film. I think The Power of a Dog, for me, I really feel strongly about it. Belfast could come in there. I'm not sure, but who knows? I mean, BAFTA's a good indication, isn't it, as to what's to come, really?
It is. And that's the great thing about watching it, is seeing, are there going to be any surprises, everything like that. But one thing is clear, I think, in terms of having things in the bag, Dune is going to be this year's Mad Max Fury Road. I think it's going to take all the technical awards, deservedly so. But it does beg the question, when a film is taking literally like every award, like why is it not in the question for sort of best picture? But there we go. That's a conversation for another day.
Absolutely. Right, moving on now. Shall we do some reviews?
Let's do the Batman.
The Batman. Okay, excellent. right, so The Batman, Yeah. Long time coming.
Okay. Long time coming. Long especially time coming. For me, because I had to wait an extra week and a half.
Oh, I felt for you. And I came out of it and I was like, oh, Joe is actually just gonna be like scratching the carpet floorboards, be like, get me out of here.
Dan, I can't tell you how disappointed. Obviously, I was due to see it with my younger brother on his birthday, which is a special thing because, you know, I took him to see The Dark Knight back in the day. And obviously, I caught COVID, could not go. And I was devastated. And I just want to give a shout out to all these people on Twitter, okay? Even the people who say, oh, no spoilers, I hate spoilers. Y'all ain't as good as you think. Because going on Twitter and seeing the amount of stuff that's just coming out or, you know, about the Batman, even like throwaway lines that the Penguin says and things like that. I'm like, guys, seriously, it's been out for a week. Like, just keep stum.
Shut your mouth, girl. Yeah, the one who smelt it dealt it. That's all exactly. I would say. Yeah, but, definitely.
But I did see it yesterday. And obviously, this is the latest reboot from Warner Brothers. Obviously, it's probably, I was thinking about it, it's probably the biggest like property that they own, really. Mm. This time, Robert Pattinson dons the cowl as the Caped Crusader, who has to face off against Paul Dano's Riddler, who is terrifying. As the Riddler starts a killing spree of Gotham's elite, it's up to the Batman to connect the dots between their deaths and cover in a citywide conspiracy in the process. Here's a clip.
The mustache with the broken nose.
It's Kinsey Narcotics.
He's one of the guys I got into it with at the Iceberg Lounge.
What are you saying, Kinsey Moonlights for the Penguin?
All right, Moonlights is a cop.
Okay, there's a clip from The Batman, as you said, long awaited. And you know how you say like, oh, I was getting sweaty or like getting shaky or anything? I was like that last night. I saw it and the anticipation was so high. You know, I've seen a lot of 5-star reviews. I've seen a lot of buzz around it. So I was going in fully expecting full 5 stars for me to absolutely adore it. Do have some reservations about it. Let's start off with the pros, first of all. Paul Dano. Oh my gosh, what an incredible performance from Paul Dano as the Riddler here. And the film opens with this absolutely terrifying sequence where he's stalking the mayor of Gotham City. And there's a shot, you know, where he's sort of lurking in the shadows. And oh my God, like absolutely terrifying. And he manages to carry that through the entire film, more so when he's like unmasked as the Riddler. So what's great about his performance here is he basically lets go completely, has free rein behind that mask, and he's yelly and screamy. And like with super, but when he's unmasked and you see this sort of boyish, like he sort of looks like a cross between your 5-year-old nephew and your nan. It's like a combination between the two. And he's got like this innocence about him, which sort of makes him even more terrifying. And I think, you know, Batman's always only as good as its villains, and obviously the sort of icon, I guess, amongst the whole films is Heath Ledger's Joker. That's sort of, I think, the peak that every actor who plays a villain in the Batman wants to reach. And I think Paul Dano did a hell of a job. Like, I'm not saying he's better than Heath Ledger's performance, but he's certainly up there. So I love his performance as the Riddler. I really enjoyed Pattinson's Batman. I think Batman in this, obviously, he's at the beginning of his crime-fighting career, so to speak. So there's a clunkiness about him, which I think was missing from Nolan's films. He gets hurt. Like, for the first time, I think, in any Batman film, I really felt like every single punch, every gunshot, And I really felt that like this guy was going through a lot physically. Even the Batmobile, you know, this isn't a massive tank like Nolan's films. This looks like, you know, Bruce Wayne's been on Pimp My Ride and just and just got that done on MTV. So there's a crudity about it, which I really enjoyed. Other highlights, I think, across the board. Zoe Kravitz, absolutely terrific as Catwoman, Selina Kyle. Andy Serkis as Alfred. Really loved his performance, a lot better than I thought it was going to be. And Colin Farrell as the Penguin just had me in stitches. Like, he's so unrecognizable. His performance is terrific, and I loved that. So the performances are great. Jeffrey Wright as well as Commissioner Gordon, obviously got to mention him, and his back and forth with Batman was one of the sort of highlights for me. So that's great. The cinematography is great. Obviously, Greg Fraser, who did Dune, lends Dune, he's done this as well, and that's beautiful. Matt Reeves, the director, big fan of his. I loved what he did with the Planet of the Apes films. So technically and visually, it's outstanding as well. And there's some set pieces throughout it which had my heart pumping. Like, the one everybody's talking about is a car chase, which I won't go too much into, but that is just outstanding, combined with the music as well, just blew me away. However, I do have some slight reservations.
Oh, here we go, folks. Okay, hold on.
So as much as I love Pattinson's Batman, the jury is still out on his Bruce Wayne. And for me, Batman, sort of the thing I love most about it is that sort of exploration about the duality between Batman and Bruce Wayne. And as much as I loved his Batman, his Bruce Wayne, I did feel like he was a bit of a whiny teenager. And I think that's the intention, I think. Obviously, he's a bit emo, I guess. Like, he listens to My Chemical Romance, clearly. You know,
definitely
he loves all that. Yeah, like, he loves that. He loves all that type of music, you can tell. And I just wasn't sold by his Bruce Wayne. And I understand that, obviously, we've seen a lot of Bruce Wayne in the other films, but in this one, they wanted to just make it about the Batman, hence the title. But I still would have liked to have seen more of Bruce Wayne and explored that sort of side of him in more detail. You know, it starts off with like a sort of voiceover, and then that sort of disappears until the end. And I thought if they went down the road of sort of like a Taxi Driver voiceover through it, that would have been really interesting. The film also, for me, lost a little bit of goodwill towards the end. I can't really talk about that because it will be a massive spoiler.
Yeah. And can I just say, you did mention that when we were at the party, and you were like, yes, if they do this, it's not going to be five. And yes, so when it did that, I was like, it's going to be a five.
Yeah, exactly. And it lost a bit of goodwill only because, you know, up until that point, I felt that it'd done a fantastic job of being something completely different to what we'd seen before. And then when they sort of introduced those themes and, you know, certain things, I was like, okay, well, we have seen this before. And I think it's totally like unnecessary because it has no relevance really to anything which has happened before. I did feel the length in a couple of places. And I did feel like the script sometimes got a bit lost in itself. You know, Riddler is supposed to be like, you know, the master of mystery and all this business. And then halfway through, he's like, oh, newsflash, we've received a video on the Riddler's social media explaining a lot of the plot. And I was like, oh, well, I would have rather learned that stuff in a more probably interesting way, in a cleverer way. I do think The Dark Knight does a far better job of unraveling the villain's plans as opposed to this. So overall, I think it is dark, it's broody, it's terrifying, really terrifying. Great performances. Technically, it's brilliant. The length, I think, could have been a bit tighter, and I do think they could have got rid of a few scenes. And there were a couple of things in there which didn't sit quite right with me and took me out of the film. But overall, you know, it's done incredibly well. It's going to. And I enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to seeing what they do next. What did you think about it?
Well, firstly, very fair points there. Very, very fair points. And I was in the same boat. I was a bit apprehensive going into this because I thought, I mean, I'm a fan of Batman, but I mean, come on, the series has taken many directions. Yes. Highs and lows. And when I heard they were doing a much darker, grittier version of Batman, I just kind of thought, well, Christopher Nolan's done that, you know? Why do we need to have this one? And I saw the runtime, and I was kind of just like, why? Why would they make it 3 hours? I walked out of this and I absolutely adored it. for me, the 3-hour runtime was not an issue. I can see why it is for some people. For me, this film was shorter than some 90-minute films I've seen. Honestly, it didn't drag for me at all. The pacing was fantastic. Like I said, the reason I love this so much is because it is a darker, grittier, more of a crime noir version of Batman, but it balances so well with the, you know, source material as well. It doesn't forget the source material. And I would go as far to say the actual Gotham City in this is the most realistic depiction I've seen of Gotham City. I mean, if I was to read the comic books and go back to the source material, I feel like this is exactly what should be envisioned. So I was very happy with kind of, you know, the gloominess of it, the real kind of mystery to it all. And I just love the story. Paul Dano as well, like, he's just terrific as this, like, menacing serial killer. And every time he was on screen, I had goosebumps. I was just shivering. Yes. And again, Amelia, who I went to see it with, was the same. I mean, she couldn't look at the screen. And that's what I loved about it, is the fact that we have this cat and mouse detective story in the film where Batman, you know, isn't this kind of overarching superhero saving the day. He's working with the detectives to try and find this killer as he's murdering off these characters and these police officers and these basically corrupt members of society. And I thought the whole storyline of that I found so intriguing, and I felt like they haven't done that before. They've dabbled in it, I think, with the Christopher Nolan films, but they haven't fully embraced it like this film does. You're right, the cast are fantastic. Zoe Kravitz, just how grounded her character is. You know, she doesn't come in like a cat suit. It's all kind of very downplayed, and I loved her in it. Jeffrey Wright, I was very impressed with him. Very different to the Commissioner Gordon in, let's say, the Nolan trilogy with Gary Oldman. Very different, but again, really enjoyed, like I said, his relationship with Batman. Pattinson, I thought, was terrific. And again, I was concerned as, oh, is he going to be too similar to Christian Bale? But he's not. I think he is less mature as a person because, that's, you know, he's younger. And I liked that he was a bit more subdued and kind of gothic and emo-y. I thought I fitted the tone really nicely. The only character I wanted a bit more from was Andy Serkis as Alfred. I didn't quite understand it. He's in very few scenes. Something happens in the film, which I'm not going to spoil, which takes him out of the film. But I am looking forward to seeing what he does, because for me, I was just kind of like, I don't know. I felt like he couldn't have been in it and it would have been the same film for me. But like I said, it's not his fault. And I think I'm looking forward to seeing him have a bigger role in future films. And maybe that's the plan for the series. So for me, I loved it. I loved the darker, grittier twist on this Batman story. Pattinson's fantastic. The cast are great. Visually, just stunning. And for me, the score and the music and how it happened. Oh, and how it just, like, just, you know, plays along to, especially the car chase scene with Batman and the Penguin. I mean, my heart was beating so fast. And yeah, if you're going to go watch it, go see it on the bigger screen. Go see it in IMAX or Super Screen. It is well worth. And I cashed out and I paid for Amelia to see it in Super Screen. I'm so glad we did. And yeah, I mean, I loved it. And I can see why all the other releases were like, we're gonna leave in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, like literally like a few weeks. Although... Yeah. Catherine Tate's The Nan is out this Friday. So watch out, Batman.
Watch out, Batman. 2006 is coming for you. So yeah, loved it, loved it. There we are.
Great.
Moving on now to something a bit more on the smaller screen. Disney Plus now has released a new Pixar film. Yes, another Pixar movie. But Pixar employees are fine about it, right? They're not bitter or anything. No,
definitely
of course not.
Definitely not.
So this is Turning Red, what I do every time I see Joe.
You're bright red now. Bright red.
I am. So this is Turning Red, and this is directed by Domi Shee. Basically, it's a story around a 13-year-old girl named Milin, who turns into a giant red panda whenever she gets too excited. And if you've seen the trailer, it's all about her self-control, trying to not become this massive big red panda. It's all about her battles through high school, puberty, all those things, and in this kind of coming-in-age story. Here's a clip.
Maylin Lee, and ever since I turned 13, I've been doing my own thing, making my own moves, 24/7, 365. I wear what I want, say what I want, and I will not hesitate to do a spontaneous cartwheel if I feel so moved. Crap! Not to brag, but being 13 means I'm officially a grown-up, at least according to the Toronto Transit Commission.
Good for you.
About that hustle, am I right?
Wow! Oh! Ah! That was the clip there from Turning Red. And actually, I found it quite difficult to describe the story because a lot of it is left out of the trailer of what the film is actually about. And if you've seen articles and you've heard, you know, reviews about it, the film is about puberty. It's about coming to a point in life where you're becoming a teenager. It's about menstruation. It's about, you know, having these feelings in these emotions inside you. And also having an environment where you have a family that obviously aren't the most supportive in the film. And that is kind of illustrated very nicely through this red panda that she can't control. And it just kind of, anytime she has a strong feeling or anger or emotion, it just kind of comes out. And I think that's a really cute concept. And honestly, the moment this film started, the visual style, the pacing of it, there's a whole scene where she's kind of, this 30-year-old girl's walking down the street, she's going to school, and it's set in like 2002. It's got all like the boy bands, and I was like, oh, I said, this is great. I was like, this is so much fun. Perfect like Saturday morning film to watch, and I was like, I'm going to love this. And I think it started off fantastic for me. I love the message. I just think for me, I couldn't quite immerse myself in it, and I don't know why this is. For me, it's a very different animation style to a lot of what Pixar has done. And the director and the production have admitted to that. They said it's a very different style. It's much more erratic. It's much more quick and pacey compared to their other films. And for me, I just felt like it lost a bit of the heart and soul of Pixar. I felt like it's such a fast-moving film that I wanted to slow down a little bit. And I wanted it to focus much more on the characters, their relationships. When really, the film is about this young girl who wants to get tickets for this concert. And that's kind of what they, you know, want to do. And I just felt like, you know, with other Pixar films that we've had recently, films like Luca, essentially it's been about the relationship between all these different characters. I mean, forget the story, the story's kind of in the background. The heart and soul of it is about these characters. Same with Soul, which I didn't love, but I appreciated that it was about something deeper than just kind of this artificial storyline. With Turning Red, I didn't quite get that as much. It focused a lot on the story, on these young teenage girls, you know, going to this concert because they've got all these hormones. And that's great, but I just want a bit more of the other characters to be a bit more developed. And yeah, like I said, it's strange. I turned to Amelia after watching it, and I just said, if I watched that, I wouldn't automatically think it's Pixar, which is strange. It felt like a DreamWorks or a Sony. There was nothing distinctive in it.
I get that.
That made me feel like, oh, wow, I can definitely feel it's Pixar. Likewise, I was never that emotional throughout it, which is not like me. I mean, any Pixar film, I think I've cried in every single one. You know, even Soul, I think you don't need to have a super dark subject matter to make me cry. Luca, I blubbered like a baby in Luca, and it's not anything about anything serious. I didn't get that here, and it was a real shame. And I don't know whether it's I need to watch it again, or maybe I went in with a different angle to it. But for me, I just felt like I lost a bit of the heart and soul of Pixar. But I'm on my own. I can tell looking at the reviews. But what did you think of this?
Well, I had a few of your same concerns, funnily enough, when the film started, because it is a fizzing, candy-coloured, you know, pop, you know, from the get-go. It has got this energy running throughout it, which it just never, ever stops. And in that beginning introduction, which you mentioned, you know, where she goes on, hey, this is me, and I do this and this. And I was like, oh, this could get a bit annoying really quickly. But I did end up settling into it. One of my other concerns was the mother, played by Sandra Oh, Ming, who is just awful. Like, her mother absolutely wound me up. To the point where I was like, I don't think I've been this stressed in a film since Uncut Gems. Like, Uncut Gems was the last film I remember being properly stressed out about. Yeah. And there were a few times where I turned to Hannah and I was like, I don't know if I can watch this because your mother is literally driving me insane.
I mean, forget cringe. The woman turns up at her school, right? Which you are not allowed in. She breaks through the gate and she's like spying on her daughter in the classroom.
Horrific.
And you could turn this into like a horror film, to be honest with you, where she eventually murders her.
And I just thought, at the beginning especially, I was like, okay, I don't know if I can handle this. But then, as you said, as the plot sort of you know, revealed itself, and like I said, a lot of the plot is missing from the trailers, which I think is a good thing in a lot of ways. But it went down different avenues, which I wasn't really expecting, so it surprised me a lot. I loved the history, you know, about the family and sort of the explanation behind why she's turning into a red panda. But more than anything, I think look, you know, there's been a lot of talk about this film on Twitter and in the press and everything about a review, which, you know, wasn't very favorable because, you know, I think it was like a man basically saying, oh, I couldn't relate to the character, therefore I didn't enjoy it. Even our good friend Gary Slaymaker brought it up on his last BBC Radio Wales show and said, hand in your badge to the film critic in question. So, and I think part of this is, it was great to sit there and I sort of, even though I enjoyed it, my better half Hannah, she really enjoyed it.
Yeah,
I think you could tell that she maybe related to a few of the things and maybe understood like the relationships and saw maybe some of her friendships in the characters in the film. And sometimes it's lovely to like watch a film through the eyes of another person as well. And I felt like I was doing that a little bit with Turning Red, which I really, really enjoyed. And I think we always say on the show, you know, representation is important. And I think it's great that, you know, you've got a teenage Asian girl as a central lead in a Pixar film. But I think other than that, you know, the visuals are great. I love the soundtrack, like the boy band soundtrack. Like that song is an absolute bop. It's a bop. I love it. And I just thought it was entertaining. And, you know, I play it for my niece, for example. She's 13 in December. And I think it's great that people like my niece have these films to sort of watch and relate to. So I ended up really enjoying it, even though the mother is absolutely awful.
Yeah, and I think if there is going to be a sequel, I think we should get her in prison. You know,
definitely.
I think the film should be the Red Panda in the courtroom, you know, trying to get her into prison, basically.
Yeah.
She's found definitely guilty.
Pixar, if you're listening,
give me a call. Give me a call, baby. We're going to make you millions on that one. So Turning Red is available now on Disney Plus. Moving on now, we got the chance to sit down with Welsh director Craig Roberts all about his brand new film. It's called The Phantom of the Open. It's out in cinemas March 18th. And he sat down with us to talk about how it's based on a true story, the filmmaking process, and much more. Here it is.
I didn't choose golf. It was more it chose me. It was destiny.
Sorry!
Flippin' heck. Where I come from, the only job was the shipyard. But I did have ambitions, of course. If you could do anything in the whole world, what would you do?
Drink Guinness.
Pretty soon, my own dreams were put on hold.
Stop this stupid dancing near the TV.
It's not stupid.
Because I had a family now.
Shut it!
I knew a young man once said he was going to be somebody.
I promised champagne, caviar, diamonds. You should have married him. Then, well, everything changed.
And he's done it. It just goes to show, if you put your mind to it, you can achieve anything you want to.
I'm going to have a crack at the British Open.
Golf.
The British Open is the most respected tournament in the world.
I never even played bloody golf before, Dad.
Mind your language on the course.
F***ing hell.
It says professional. You sure?
Well, practice is the road to perfection.
Welcome on the tee, Maurice Flitcroft.
Don't adjust the television, this is actually happening.
And it misses. Oh dear me.
How does it feel to have shot the worst round in history?
And it's in, and the crowd go wild.
Quite exciting, actually. You've done it
all. Well, what were you thinking, Dad? I've never heard you mention golf in your life.
I'm sorry I embarrassed you, son.
How can you say that after all he's done for you?
Are you going to try again, Morris?
An open championship should be open to everyone.
I want them barred from every club in the country!
Look at that.
What about if you're to enter as someone else? Bonjour.
From Paris, France, Gerard Hoppe.
He's a natty dresser, I'll give him that.
Merci beaucoup.
Whatever happens, no one can say you didn't try.
What a great opening drive. Have they got the real Maurice Flitcroft?
Sorry!
No, I think that's him.
Maurice Flitcroft.
Severiano Ballesteros.
You what?
Solo llámame Seve.
What's he? Seve.
Hasta entonces.
Hasta cojones.
We are excited to welcome back to the show one of our favourite filmmakers working today, here to discuss his latest film, The Phantom of the Open, which is in cinemas March 18th. Please welcome back to the show, Craig Roberts. Craig, Diokanvara, thank you for joining us. How have you been?
Thanks for having me. I've been okay, thank you. How are you both?
Yeah, we've been well. I've just recovered from a bout of COVID, but I did get to watch your film whilst ill in bed with COVID, which brightened my day.
Which is the best way to watch it.
yeah. Poster. Well, firstly, congratulations on the film. The reviews are out and are glowing, to say the least. You just have to look at the poster and it's covered in 5-star reviews. And I will just point out that the film currently does have 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. So that's a big achievement there. How are you feeling right now, knowing the film has been received so well, not just by critics, but also by audiences as well?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how I feel about it, to be honest. I'm excited that, and, you know, relieved that people are enjoying the movie. And, you know, that's the main thing, really, as long as people have a good time and don't trash it too bad in the reviews, then that's okay. And, you know, it gets released this weekend. And, it's more nerve-wracking than anything else, that you just hope that people connect to it and that it does, you know, Morris justice.
Well, I think it definitely has done that. For those who don't know the true story behind Phantom of the Open, can you tell them what it's about and how you came to be involved in the project?
Yeah, sure. So Phantom of the Open is based on the true story of Morris Flitcroft, who was a crane driver in Barrow in the 1970s. He got made redundant and then one night watching TV discovered golf. So decided to pursue that and become a golfer, entered the British Open and recorded the worst ever record to date. And it was a 1-2-1. And he got banned from golf, but wouldn't take no for an answer and got back in a few more times. And I think what I loved about it so much was his optimism and just how much he was a doer and a dreamer, and he wouldn't take no for an answer. And I think we could all learn from Morris and how much he believed in himself.
Absolutely. When we last spoke, we actually discussed Eternal Beauty, and it brings what you just mentioned there sort of brings it nicely on to Morris himself. When we last spoke about Eternal Beauty, you obviously mentioned that Sally Hawkins's character Jane, you felt that she had a superpower, you know, in his schizophrenia was a superpower. When you approached this, did you see Morris as having a superpower? And if you did, what would Morris's superpower be?
It would be his confidence. Would be his superpower, and not allowing people to tell him not to do something. And yes, I did actually. Weirdly, when I read Simon's script, there was a scene that describes Morris taking his work clothes off, and it says that he does it like Superman and reveals his golf attire. And weirdly, honestly, connected me back to Eternal Beauty. I was like, oh, this could be cool if I, you know, in some way turn him into a super, you know, some kind of superhero. So we actually did with the images and the iconography of it all. We basically played it like he's Superman. So throughout the movie, there's like even like small Easter eggs on his number plate is his Kryptonian name, Clark Kent's name. And like there's, you know, he's the same dog as Superman he has. And there's like a comet that flies through the air at the beginning of the movie. And he flies around the world like Superman. So actually, yeah, I went full superhero on this, like not subtle at all.
No, but the visual style is great. And that's one of the things I love so much about this film. Obviously, Eternal Beauty, one of my favorite films of that year. And seeing that visual style sort of being taken from that to this, which is, for want of a better word, I guess, more sort of mainstream in air brackets, you know, it's playing to a massive audience, you know, the multiplexes. How important was it for you to maintain that visual style and inject the story with that visual style that you've already sort of been honing with films like Eternal Beauty?
That's a good question. I think it all came from the story, really, and what serves the story. And for this, as soon as I read the script, I thought it was incredibly funny. It was like, it's hilarious. But I suppose I was slightly worried that if we played to the comedy too much, then like the emotional stuff wouldn't land as well towards the back end of it. So really, in terms of the grammar and approaching how we shot it, I really wanted to shoot it like a drama, if I'm totally honest. I wanted to shoot it like a drama and not your stereotype, you know, like the normal coverage you would do with a comedy. Normally it's wide, medium, close, and you put it together in the edit, and you know that's how comedy works, and you create that rhythm. But we kind of we used like lens, you know, like zoom lenses, as they would have done in like Altman movies in the 70s, and we tried to, I suppose, do a lot of it in one, which was, you know, start in a wide, go into a medium, into a close. So it wasn't so much about trying to make it quirky for the sake of it, or trying to, you know, make it feel different. It was, I suppose, just playing to the drama of it and trying to ground it a little bit more so that the comedy felt more real.
Can we just ask briefly about Mark Rylance as well, Sir Mark Rylance? Actually, funny, I watched him on BBC Breakfast this morning. With great interview. How did he come on board? I mean, how important was the casting, and how much involvement did you have in casting that character? Because obviously Morris is such a big personality. How did you go about that?
Once I came on board to the picture, it was about, you know, we sat down and was like, who could be the best person to do this? And Mark was number one always. I mean, we, you know, again, that drama thing, we wanted a character actor, not like a comedian of sorts. We wanted a character actor that would ground it. And he's the best, really. So we sent the script to him, and I wrote a letter to him saying how wonderful he is. And luckily he'd never been sent a comedy. So we talked on the phone, and he had thoughts about the script, and he didn't want it to be too farcical, the comedy and stuff like that. And I mentioned Punch Drunk Love as a reference for tone, you know, in terms of like where the comedy should sit. And yeah, we seemed to align with that. And yeah, then it was about making it. And to be honest, there's very little directing going on when Mark Rylance is in front of the camera. He's so good. And, you know, he brings you in, he carries the movies. He's excellent on every level.
And I've got one final question. Nick Stradlin from Wales in the Movies, he saw the film a couple of days ago, and he did a video, I don't know if you've seen it, but basically singing your praises and saying, in terms of Welsh filmmaking, you are probably Wales's best hope at the moment in terms of, you know, making these films and getting sort of Wales into the mainstream media. How do you feel about that?
Well, that's a lot of pressure. That's very kind of him to say. I don't know. I mean, I don't really know. I mean, I'm just trying to make films, and I suppose just, you know, I tried to shoot this film in Wales. Unfortunately, we couldn't because it was during COVID and we couldn't get in there. But I love Wales. I'll shoot my next movie in Wales, and probably every movie that I make, I plan to try and shoot there. I just feel safe there, and I love it, and I love the people there, and there's so many incredibly, you know, talented people there. But in terms of being the hope, I don't know about that. Absolutely no. There's so many great filmmakers coming out, and you know, that I'm excited about. Certainly like Prano, Bailey Bond, and stuff like that. I think there's some fantastic filmmakers.
Brilliant. Craig, thank you so much for chatting with us. All the best with the film. We wish you all the best. And yeah, thank you again.
Great to see you both again. Thanks so much for speaking with me.
Yeah, no problem. Take care.
Thanks, nice Take one, guys. Care. Thanks so much.
Thank you then. Take care.
And that was our interview there with the lovely Craig Roberts. And, you know, it's great to see him again. We interviewed him, obviously, last time for Eternal Beauty. And it's just great to see this film finally come to light, because it was delayed a bit, wasn't it? We'd heard about it. We didn't know when it was going to get released. But I just say kudos to him. And I will just point out again, the film has 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. And I think whether you love a film or hate a film, that is a big achievement.
Absolutely. And the film is, as you said in the interview, doing incredibly well, which just sort of, you know, got my hype. I was so hyped for this. And especially because obviously the last time we spoke to him, you know, the interview ended and he did tell us that this was his next project. So it's, again, a sort of full circle moment that he mentioned it, and we've managed to talk to him about this. And it was great to catch up with him. I am wearing my Killers denim jacket today because he did star in a Killers music video, but I don't think he noticed, unfortunately. But there we go. So the film itself, Phantom of the Open, as Craig basically said in the interview, it's directed by Craig Roberts from a script by Simon Farnaby, who I absolutely love. It tells the true story of Morris Flitcroft, played by Mark Rylance. Set in the 70s, he's faced with redundancy and basically decides to take up golf. You know, like most people do when they retire, he thinks, oh, I'll take up golf. But the difference here is he thinks, oh, I'll take up golf and I will also enter the Scopen. And through a remarkable twist of fate and probably the biggest of admin errors that could possibly happen, he gets accepted and plays one of the worst rounds of golf ever recorded in the history of the sport. And basically hilarity ensues from there. As I said, I've been excited for this for a long time, not only because I loved Eternal Beauty, I love Craig Roberts's filmmaking style. You know, none of that is false when I say that in the interview. I really, really love his work. And the combination between him and Simon Farnaby, who I love as an actor, he's obviously the star of Horrible Histories, Ghosts, which is on BBC, which I love. And he obviously wrote the Paddington films. I'm a big fan of his work as well. So the combination of the two getting in a room together and coming up with this film, I just thought it couldn't fail. And I don't think it has in the slightest. The great thing about this film is it does have that same sort of heart and soul of the Paddington films. It's a film about kindness. It's a film about understanding. It's a film about embracing your quirks as an individual. It's about a film about pursuing your dreams, you know, and pushing people to pursue theirs as well. And, you know, doing whatever it takes and not being afraid to work hard at something. You know, Morris says throughout the entire film, you know, practice is the road to perfection. I think that's a lovely message, especially in these times. And we're all coming out of a period in time where, you know, COVID has happened and it's been dreadful. And I know there's still a lot going in the world, which is absolutely dreadful right now in Ukraine and everything like that. So it's lovely to have a film which is so good-natured, so positive, so uplifting in terms of its style, its tone, and its messaging, that I just think that's why, that's the key to its success. It's people, audiences are loving it. But, you know, it's a family-friendly film. I think all families can go and see it. It does have a few swear words, but I think that's absolutely fine. And I think it's just a proper old crowd pleaser, like Eddie the Eagle, which was released a few years ago, and I absolutely adored that as well. The film's got the comedy, it's got the drama. It did make me tear up a little bit, you know, in terms of its themes about fathers and sons. And I just think Craig's knocked it out of the park. I just properly love it. And whereas with other films, it's like, you know, I did have a few reservations, like Batman and things like that. I finished Phantom of the Opera, as I said in the interview. I watched it in bed with COVID, with my girlfriend, who didn't really know anything about it and was like, oh, I'll just go on my phone. I was like, trust me, you're going to love it. And she watched it and it finished. And I was like, I can't think of a single bad thing about that film. I was like, I loved it. So 5 stars, film of the year so far for me, which I was not expecting. I was expecting Batman to be up there, but film of the year so far for me, absolutely loved it.
You could say it was a hole in one.
It was a hole in one. In fact, I'll say it now. It was a hole in one.
Okay, I'll let you have that one. Really good. I mean, I agree with you. I think you're a massive fan of his visual style, as am I. He has this kind of authenticity to his films. I mean, the look of it, the kind of the cinematography. In particular, I love kind of the dreamlike sequences where Morris is kind of going off in his imagination. Those really set it apart from other sports dramas. And I think with any sport drama, whatever the sport is, you are going to bump into a few cliches along the way, aren't you? You're going to, there is a story of him overcoming the odds and, you know, pursuing his dream. And we've seen that before. You know, I think Mark Rylance is terrific. I love in particular his flipping it.
I knew you would as well. I knew you'd love that.
New drinking game, take a shot every time he says that. You'll be on the floor, mate. I mean, listen, I think it's a sweet film. I think it's like a cozy, warm hug. And if this was, you know, ever nominated for the Sunday Afternoon Awards, it would win. You know, I'm going to create an award where it's a tea and a biscuit award. And that's what you get. And this film is, it's lovely. The performances are great. For me, I'm not a massive fan of golf. And unlike something like King Richard, which is about tennis, obviously, in Wimbledon, that, like, hooked me. And I was like, wow. I was like, I like tennis. It's okay. But there was much more kind of human drama in there. There was much more kind of, and not tragedy per se, but there was much more emotion in there. Whereas this, it's kind of, it drifts over. I found some of, like, the backstories of the characters and some of the more human drama bits, which I like in sports, you know, sports dramas. I love that it's about the sport. I also want it to be about these characters and their individual lives. And I felt like I could have had a bit more of that. However, you're right. I think when you finish it, you instantly feel happier.
Yes.
You know, you feel it is like a warm hug. It's an inspirational story. I'm really glad that, you know, Craig chose it, because I don't feel like it's a story that many directors would be like, oh, we have to make a film about this. But it's really, you know, lighthearted, uplifting, funny, a bit like The Duke, for example, that's in cinemas now with Helen Mirren and Jim Broadbent. It's a really kind of quirky British comedy that I think we need right now. We need those types of films. So yeah, I enjoyed it. I think go and check it out. I mean, it looks like it's the only film coming out on Friday. So there we are.
Well, no.
Oh, hold on.
Catherine Tate's The Nan
movie. Can you imagine? Please.
Please, people, I don't think it's got anything to worry about, but please do not go see The Nan over this. Go and see Phantom of the Open. Like I said, it's a proper crowd pleaser, one for all the family, and I think it's going to do really well, hopefully. It's out today, March 18th, with show today, so you've got no excuse. Go out and see it, and thanks again to Craig for joining us, and hopefully we'll see him on the next one.
Absolutely. Congratulations, Craig. Moving on now, we're coming to the end of the show, but we cannot end this episode without having a bit of two truths and a lie, baby. Right, Joe, are you ready?
As ready as I'll ever be. Yeah. I mean, I've got to win one of these just by probability by this point, right?
Well, you know what? You've had a bit of break. You've had COVID now, so maybe that's kind of heightened your senses a little bit. I don't know.
I'm like Spider-Man right now.
You are. You're a changed man.
I am. Yeah. I'm ready to go.
Right. Here we go. So for people who don't know, two truths and a lie, I'm going to tell Joe three facts from this week's three new releases. One is a lie. The other two are true. Joe just needs to tell me which one I am lying about. Are you ready, Joe?
Let's go.
Let's go, baby. Okay, fact one. This is about the Batman. Robert Pattinson auditioned for the Batman during the filming of Tenet in June 2019 and lied to Christopher Nolan about it, but he eventually found out from Warner Brothers. So he went behind Chris Nolan's back. You should never do that, people, okay? So that's your first fact. Fact two. Turning Red is the first Pixar film ever to be directed by a woman. And fact three. Morris Flitcroft used to practice his golf on the playing fields of the local grammar school as he was banned from all the golf courses in the area. So those are your three facts. Is the lie, fact one, that Robert Pattinson auditioned for the Batman during Tenet and didn't tell Chris Nolan? Fact two. Turning Red is the first Pixar film to be directed by a woman? Or fact three? The good old Morris Flitcroft had to go to a local grammar school to practice his golf. Do you think you got this one?
I'm pretty confident. Oh! I might have made myself look like a fool by doing a dance there. But I have read in the past, I don't know if it was fake news, but I have read in the past the article about Robert Pattinson auditioning for the Batman whilst filming Tenet. So I have read something about that in the past. The Morris Flitcroft one, obviously we've interviewed Craig today, so I've done a little bit of digging, done a bit of research, so I know that one is a truth. So then by default, the lie has to be the Turning Red lie. I don't think it's the first ever Pixar to be directed by a woman, maybe a woman of color, but not the first Pixar film to be directed by a woman. Please tell me I'm right, please.
Joe, I can't believe I'm saying this. Not another one.
You're joking.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding. He's done it. Finally.
We need to get some sound effects in here. We need to get brilliant.
Party poppers.
Fireworks going off. Fireworks going off in the background also.
Yes. Well done, Joe. So the lie was indeed that Turning Red is the first Pixar film to be directed by a woman. It's the second. So it's not like it's the fifth or sixth, is it? But progress.
Yeah, we're getting there. Making films since 1996 or something like that. But, we are getting there. We're getting there slowly.
Slow and steady, yeah. So well done. You finally did it. You finally popped your two truths and a lie cherry.
Now, Dan, I'm confident. I think going forward, this is it now. This is it.
He's got a chip on his shoulder now.
But hopefully, next show, I won't even have to partake because we'll actually have guests on our next show.
We will, everyone. Absolutely. And that's a good kind of point to raise there. Good there. Well done. Our next episode, we are very excited to tell you, is going to be our Oscars special. which obviously we did last year, and we are going to have our Oscars panel, which we will announce during the show. We're going to keep it a little bit of a secret. So please make sure to tune in for that. And yeah, going to be talking all about this year's nominees, which we think should win, deserve to win, a couple of games and segments as well. It's going to be good fun. And of course, the booze will be out. We'll be on the beers and the wine. So, even if you're not interested in the Oscars, it could go absolutely tits up. So why not listen for that?
Good sell.
Good net. Thank you so much. But that's all we've got time for on today's show. A big thank you to Joe.
Thank you to you, Dan.
I'm glad I could do some easy questions for Two Truths.
I know you went easy on me this week, I think.
I didn't. Don't worry. don't forget, you can follow us on social media. We're on Facebook under the Dan and Joe Film Show. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram, or as the kids call it, the Gram. I'm Dan with really the kids at DJ Film Show on Twitter and Instagram. You can also listen to all of our old episodes on Mixcloud, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. And we'll see you very soon for our Oscar special. See you then. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.